back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our Wise conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. I want to remind everybody, as the Ravens are home all month, Luke will be in Owings Mills each and every day, bringing it all home for you. And the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, powered up by the Maryland Lottery, Let Yourself Play, is coming on Friday to Nick's Clubhouse Grill. But we're going to have the whole schedule out, including our mayor, Brandon Scott, at Coco's, coming up in November. I have waited my whole life to have this guy on the program. I am a huge fan of his work and his writings. We bump into each other and elbow up at owners' meetings and places where guys like John Gruden walk around. He has inked a new book on all things Patriot world and leadership and behind the Iron Curtain. We welcome Seth Wickersham, longtime fan of yours, as you know, and I'm glad it took a book to get you out, and I'm sorry you missed most of the Lamar Magic game signing books, but I've had some book things in my life, too. Congratulations. I mean, the early pub on the book, I mean, it feels like you've penetrated something that a lot of folks have tried to get a lot of information on up in Beantown, Seth.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate your help, and I'm glad to finally be here.
Well, we'll talk about Lamar in a little bit. We could talk about the season and John Gruden and Urban Meyer and leadership. But let's start to the genesis of your book and being able to write a book like this, right? Like, you are a deep dive guy. You're an incredible writer. You've been inside with sources and people. The modern Mike Silver, although, you know, he may take offense to that. Being able to penetrate and get a book done. I've done it twice with the Ravens, with Brian Billick, who's my partner here in Baltimore on behalf of the Living Classrooms Foundation. The second book around, I sort of did in a covert way, getting information about how the Ravens won a Super Bowl. Your thing wasn't like about winning one. Your thing was about sustainability and how it really works. And I think a lot of people have wondered, you know, is it the avocado ice cream of Tom Brady? I had Bob Kravitz on last week with the Colts around. Was it the air out of the footballs? You know, when you take the deep dive into go, you had to know that Bill Belichick would like never know who you are again, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've interviewed Coach Belichick and met with him many times. The public record's pretty clear on that, but you know, I appreciate that. The book, in my point of view, and even though there was an ESPN newser that came out that had lots of swear words and fights in it, and there's some of that in the book, obviously, but it really is about how people accomplish sustained greatness in an arena that's it's inherently fleeting and fragile, and how Tom Brady and Bill Belichick were able to accomplish this, and how Robert Kraft was able to keep the band together as long as he did. And I think that those are the larger themes that people will take away from the book.
Well, I wrote two books thinking there might be another one. There was a Purple Rain one, and it took 13 years to have another one. And in between, the Patriots were, you know, celebrating and throwing Lombardi trophies across, you know, from one side of Boston to the other many, many times. And the sustainability is what they're all trying to do. What teams that have sustained it. I mean, the Chiefs are trying to figure that out now, right? So mm-hmm. The other side of this, there's always been some black magic in what they do there. And look, man, I mean, I remember being, you know, with Marvin Lewis and seeing The Art of War. You know what I mean? These guys really read up on this. And obviously, you know, some Grudens and some Myers get resurrected to all of this. Belichick's never had to move. He never had to move off the quarterback that nobody else wanted from the sixth round. In tackling this project, and what were you expecting to find? And then what did you find when you start opening the onion? Because I'm sure you had 5 or 10 directions where you thought, I think I want to take the project in this direction. And then information comes to you that changes the arc of the narrative of it's better to be feared, your book.
Yeah, well, I'll go into some depth with that answer because it's varied and it's nuanced. You know, one of the most interesting things is that and it's kind of lucky, but I started my career essentially at the same time that this dynasty got going. One of my very first features for ESPN Magazine was going up to Foxborough, Massachusetts to interview the guy who seemed to be filling in well for Drew Bledsoe and would probably return to the bench once the franchise quarterback was healthy again. And I met with Tom Brady at the old Foxborough Stadium. It was like a high school field. And, you know, he was wearing like a gray sweatsuit in his back. He had a backpack on. He looked like a college student and his backpack was full of beer because he had lost a bet on the Michigan State game. And I remember that Brady at that point, one thing he said to me in that meeting that you know, was pretty unremarkable other than a couple things. He said, you know, football's always come really easy to me. And it's one of those things you look back now and you're like, wow, he saw something coming that nobody else did. And so being at his, you know, house, his Super Bowl parties, you know, knowing him over the years and seeing him acclimate to fame, and then meeting with Coach Belichick, you know, often late night conversations where he was done with his work and he was a little bit more expansive, you really kind of understand, at least as best as I could, how these two were, how they were different. And, you know, I think that one of the most interesting things is everyone's wondering, well, you know, how do you keep that window open when you see it's closing for the Chiefs already? And the Ravens have obviously struggled to keep it open, even though they've had a very competitive team over the years.
And the Buccaneers didn't even have a window. And then they hire a 43-year-old quarterback and win, right?
And that's it. It's like, maybe there's not really a Patriot way. Maybe there's Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, two very special people whose lives intersected at the perfect time. And for all kinds of reasons, they were able to keep this thing going longer than anybody else could.
Egos, you know, the breakup, the inevitable breakup. We all, there's always a breakup. They don't play forever, and how it goes down. So, I mean, Ray Lewis had it go down with a parade, and Jerome Bettis did. There are very few people that do that. Brady could have turned this thing off six times by now after any of these championships, or even after a tough loss in Philly Special, or, you know, wherever, or the exclamation point in coming back against the Falcons when he was 37, 8, 9. We're watching Roethlisberger. Last week he's hurt, this week he wins. There are miracles everywhere, right? But for Brady, this book, more about Brady, more about Belichick, as you saw it going in.
Well, it's about both. And yeah, it could have ended a lot of times. And there were some times in the middle of the dynasty where they weren't winning Super Bowls. They were losing a lot to the Ravens in the playoffs, actually. And, you know, there was a moment where Brady wanted a new contract. And for once, he wanted to be paid as the best quarterback in the league. And those contract negotiations were very difficult. Things that could have gone off the rails back then. But I think that one of the key moments in this, and not to bring up a sore spot among your Baltimore Ravens listeners, was really in the third quarter of the divisional playoff in 2015. The Ravens are up 14 points. The Ravens are not scared of the New England Patriots, and they're not scared of playing in Gillette Stadium. And Belichick had almost foreseen this moment where they were going to be in the playoffs after 10 years almost of not winning Super Bowls, that they might need to be more resourceful than usual. And he famously deploys the Baltimore formation and the Ravens formation, those formation and plays that ended up getting them back in the game,
and he literally confusing only the officials. I mean, that was art of war, literally, right?
It was, and it was really Belichick at his diabolical best, because he not only knew that the formations and the plays would give the Ravens trouble, he knew that running at no huddle would give the officials and perhaps set John Harbaugh, great coach with a great temper, into a fit on the sideline. And that's exactly what happened. Remember, he got an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty because he was so frustrated that the officials were not giving the Ravens time to line up and identify. The officials would announce who was ineligible, but they wouldn't say who was eligible. And so the Ravens were sort of stuck covering people that were ineligible because the look was so difficult. And because the Patriots were running a no-huddle offense, they were really putting the pressure on the Ravens. And in a three-minute span, the Patriots tied the game, sent John Harbaugh into a tailspin, and really that game ended up, I think, reigniting the dynasty in a way that, you know, fans often overlook.
Well, how many playoff games has John won since then, right? And then we would say, well, how many is Bill Belichick ever going to win without Tom Brady? Seth Wickersham is our guest. You can follow him at Seth Wickersham. The book is It's Better to Be Feared. I'm looking forward to grabbing it, reading it. I'm in the middle of all of this Ravens madness here. Anything you want to say about Lamar Jackson? You cover this professionally, Seth. And I know you were signing books during the Colts game, but we've witnessed this thing come along to say all the things he can't do or would never be able to do, whether it was at Louisville, whether it was the draft process, whether it's people calling him a running back, whether it's the vaccination process this summer. That's more science than skill at this point. But what he's done now is sort of checking off all these boxes of throwing outside the hashes, throwing the ball over your head, coming back from three touchdowns down, and doing it through the air, and having this The Indianapolis game, I would call it Superman kind of stats, literally stuff that we've never really seen in the history of the league.
Well, he's a remarkable player. And I think that one of the things we have to remember is that the line to becoming a great quarterback is not always straight up. There are plateaus along the way where defenses catch up with you and you need to find ways to overcome that. It's much more difficult than anyone gives people credit for. Tom Brady, his second year in the league, you know, his second year as the starter. I mean, he led the league in touchdown passes, but the Patriots ended up not making the playoffs that year. And he had some rough, rough games. And all great quarterbacks go through these moments where they've reached a certain level and then they need to stay ahead of defenses. And that's incredibly hard, especially when defenses spend all year, all offseason trying to figure out ways to contain you. And so I think that when you see what Lamar Jackson's doing, I think that it's promising in the evolution of what will hopefully for Ravens fans be a great quarterback. And it doesn't mean that he's there right now. He needs to keep doing this. And then obviously they need to play better in the playoffs. But what gives me a lot of optimism about watching him play is that in the moments where it looks like he's plateaued, like last night, wasn't playing that great. I mean, fumbles at the goal line, nearly fumbled at the goal line again, by the way. That was a little too close for comfort.
But well, it is a high wire act. The whole thing's a high wire act. Every time he gets hit is a high wire act for me, right?
Yeah, he's been able to overcome mistakes both by his team and himself and kind of will that team back into the game. And one of the hardest things for quarterbacks to do is to take momentum when it's seeping away from you and single-handedly turn it back. Like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, you're seeing it with Josh Allen a little bit. I mean, those guys, it's so hard to do that and they're able to do it. And that was one of the best examples I've seen of Lamar Jackson in a game where it really looked like they were going to lose. And he didn't do it himself, but he showed that trait that's exclusive to the great quarterbacks of being able to turn momentum.
Would have never been okay to lose, but certainly with the Ravens, with injuries and all the things that had gone wrong and being down, a miraculous comeback. Seth Wickersham is here. His new book is It's Better to Be Feared, about the Patriot dynasty and the Belichick and Brady and togethers and partings and all that. I want to ask you this because I do run into you at sort of high level places and owners meetings, and all these smart people get together in 32 places. They're all billionaires and millionaires, mainly white, exclusively male, and they have decided how they're going to do their organizations, and they all do them the way they do them. They were all looking for a 6'5" quarterback that could throw the ball, you know, the way Kyle Bowler threw the upright, all of that stuff. And then they all passed on Lamar Jackson, right? And they all call them something not their starting quarterback or their friend. They didn't think he was a franchise quarterback. The Ravens looked at this differently. And dude, I've been on this from the inside where Ozzie's made every decision until Eric made those decisions. Maybe there was a Phil Savage in there for a minute. I ran into George Kukanis in the press room the other night, Joe Ortiz. Same dudes. Twice. I'm 53 this week. They were 28 when I met them and they're 50. We're all like, it's sort of the same story, dude, that if I were to peel it back, it'd be the same decision makers. Yet these cats got together and said, we're going to trade into 32. We're going to draft this kid. We're going to ditch our Super Bowl MVP that we've been paying too much to. And we're going to turn this. We're going to draft differently. We're going to turn Nick Boyle and Pat Ricard into the Navy offense. We're going to put our chin strap and we're going to run the football. It's going to look the first year. It looked like you're a little younger than me, but those little magnetic football games where they all just moved in one direction. It looked that way the first year. And now we're seeing this sort of indoor pinball arena football, all these possibilities that they could do with him. No one else saw this, man. No one else was going to rebuild. Bill Belichick, none of these guys were going to retool and do it this way. There's a lot of stones going on in purple to be where they are to do this. And I know you're right. The Ravens would be an unbelievable dissection for that decision. And where it leads, I don't know. It may lead to a Lamar injury. It may lead to 3 Super Bowl. I don't know. But certainly at this point, they took a gamble. They went all in. And they are paying dividends in a way that no other organization, because everybody else would have been fired doing this stuff, Seth. You know that. No one gets fired around here.
Well, first of all, happy birthday. And second of all, I think that what makes the Ravens unique is not only their continuity and the fact that they're so smart, is that it's similar to New England in a way, in that their ideology is a lack of ideology. They're very adaptable. And they saw a lot of possibilities in Lamar Jackson. Ironically, so did New England. And remember, the Patriots didn't know if Tom Brady was going to return to the team. He was so frustrated with the way that things happened in 2017. You know, he skipped the voluntary offseason program, the only NFL starting quarterback to do so. And it was getting close to the draft, and Brady seemed to want his release from the team. He didn't want to ask for a trade because I think that people close to him believe that he would lose the fan base that had been so resolutely behind him over the years. But he seemed to like want something new. And at one point he discussed getting out of his contract with Robert Kraft. Robert Kraft wouldn't let him out of his contract, not after they had traded Jimmy Garoppolo. Then the next day, Robert Kraft changed his mind and was like, look, if you want out, we'll let you out. At that point, though, Brady had decided that he was going to return. But if he hadn't returned, I do wonder if the Patriots might have tried to make a run at Lamar, because they really liked him coming out of the draft. And obviously, there's all these teams that say, you know, oh, we really like Lamar, you know, now. But I do think the Patriots are one of those teams. And I think that they saw the similar sort of possibilities that you see that, you know, John Harbaugh and Roman and all of those guys are deploying now on the field. When you have a quarterback who, you know, Lamar's, we've had running quarterbacks throughout the years. I mean, Steve Young was obviously a phenomenal athlete and a great quarterback who could beat you with his legs. But, you know, Lamar's something different. And I think that the Patriots also saw those possibilities in addition to the Ravens. I read about it in the book.
Seth Wickersham, absolutely. It's Better to Be Feared is the book, Behind Enemy Lines, for anybody around here, and how they've won so much. I had Mike Chappell on last week. We were talking about the Manning cast, and he was talking about, because I haven't listened yet. I haven't been blessed enough to do that. But apparently when Lamar threw a touchdown pass in the game, Peyton was like, throw it away, throw it away, throw it away. And then it's a touchdown. Peyton said, I would have thrown it away five times. And Chappell made a point of Lamar seeing the game differently as a quarterback than anybody else could possibly see the game, because he has the capability of hitting a hole in the way that 98% of quarterbacks never have. And the Ravens, and maybe Greg Roman, having run, you know, some similar style of offenses, and the Kaepernick and all of that, has seen the possibilities of what this could be, because I don't know that a whole lot of offensive minds really believed that this could really work. Forget Lamar, him getting hurt, or what you need to do, but that you actually could go out and win 14 games doing it this way.
Well, you know, Steve Young won a lot of games, you know, as he was developing into a Hall of Fame quarterback. You know, Michael Vick for a long time won a lot of games too. And he's similar to Lamar, obviously phenomenal speed and ability to make things happen with his legs. I mean, we've seen this before. I don't think that every time we see a mobile quarterback, I think that sometimes we think that it's the latest iteration of something that, you know, really goes back a long way. All that said, like I said, you need to keep getting better. And that's harder to, it's so much harder than people realize. It is so much harder than people realize, working on your deficiencies, remaining unpredictable, making it harder on defenses, and putting stress on them in ways that, you know, you and I as fans don't know, but the coaches who study this stuff and spend all offseason trying to defend someone like Lamar Jackson can deploy a game plan and have it be obsolete by the end of the first quarter because Lamar's already figured you out. I don't know how he sees the game. I mean, that's something that only he can answer. Obviously, Peyton Manning saw the game much differently, in the sense that Peyton never wanted to run. But I'm just fascinated to see where he goes, because like I said, he seems to have overcome that bump, that graveyard for a lot of quarterbacks where they just can't get better than what they were once they first took the league by storm and defenses caught up. And so it'll be fascinating to see how Lamar continues to build on that. If he can do that, you know, he will be a dynamic player and a player that we've just never seen before.
I'll mix in a little Astro Ball reference and say the growth mindset that certainly Tom Brady still has to this point at 43. Seth Wickersham is our guest. Been a long time to have him on. A long time ESPN writer doing inside stories and inside football. All right, so you know, I've given away that we've rubbed elbows at these owners meetings and such, but they're all trying to chase the ring. They're all talking about integrity. They're all talking about character and hard work and all of that. And then behind all of this, there's a John Gruden that's outside, inside, selling beer on Monday Night Football. And then in the middle of Monday Night Football, this debacle happens and all of this. Anything you want to say on Gruden? Because I know you've spent a little time around him and around circles and around what really happens in these teams. We saw Colin Kaepernick get blackballed in front of the whole world a couple of years ago. And now we see the end racism and the Black Lives Matter. All of that's there. And then there's John Gruden's emails and to Bruce Allen. And then what did the Washington Football this? I don't think that this is done. This is an unfolding saga, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, no one's going to ever look inside a football facility and find that, you know, the language is clean. But, you know, I did a lot of reporting with my colleague Don Van Natta, you know, during the anthem protests when President Trump was really making it a divisive issue. And we reported on, you know, Bob McNair and the inmates running the prison and some of the wars between Jerry Jones and the league office during that time. And, you know, there is no question that some really hideous things have been said. And in terms of what John Gruden said in the emails, you know, whether that represents him as a human being, you know, I don't know, but they were deplorable and they have no business in, you know, in any football facility, to say the least.
Last thing for you, my parting shot, if you, for your ESPN and worldwide leaderness, I love Springsteen. You love Springsteen. I got to ask him a question once. He called me a dummy. It was great. I did it at the end.
What did you ask him?
You know what? The video's up. It was a great question. I waited my whole life to ask him a question. And it was sort of, you know, I got the third question. I've had Nils on a whole bunch because Nils is a Maryland guy.
Yeah, Baltimore guy.
And I ask him, you've waited your whole life to get to a Super Bowl and do this. You didn't want to play the Super Bowl. Why are you playing the Super Bowl now? This is in Tampa.
And yeah, I was there. I was at that press conference.
And you know what he said? That. He said, got a new album, dummy.
Yeah.
And I thought
he was honest, at least.
I will remember that the rest of my life. I saw Bruce twice this summer. I went up and saw it once. I saw the show 4 years ago, very early on, paid a lot of money, was a little disappointed the first time around just because it was right after E Street. I had been over in Australia and New Zealand, and then it was quiet. It was good, but I had read the book. I felt like seeing it the first time, my wife was in tears and like all of that. And I thought, I heard all these stories. And I almost didn't want to go back. I lucked into a ticket early this summer. My wife and I wanted to go to New York, and it was a little, you know, Thunderdome-y in June where everything was sort of shut down. And we went up, and I cried for 3 hours, and I walked out of the theater, and I said, I'm coming back. And I went back 2 weeks later alone, watched it again. Why do you love Bruce? Give me your whole, like, Bruce journey, because I see you on the periphery, and I'm thinking, we got that thing in common, you know?
Yeah, I'm always amused when people talk about how, you know, the sports media just loves Bruce Springsteen. I mean, he's one of 10 acts who can sell out a concert anywhere worldwide in any arena anywhere. You know, it's beyond sports media that loves Bruce Springsteen. I mean, I think that we all come to him for different reasons, but I think it's because, you know, he not only helps you forget about life for a couple hours, but he also kind of helps you learn about yourself a little bit. And, you know, I loved his book, and his book, you know, in a weird way, it was a window into his greatness and the same type of themes that I try to get at in this Patriots book, where, you know, you wonder what propels him and why he's still doing this at this age and so motivated. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in their own way are very similar, because they could have exited this race at any moment and had their health and their wealth and their legacy intact. Instead, these guys continue to blow by all the exit ramps. There's no end in sight for them. And here we have Springsteen also into his 70s, not only producing new stuff, but planning tours. And so I think that, like, when you look at, like, what makes the essential ingredients of greatness, I think that there are some broad parallels between all these guys.
I think as Americans, we love strength, but there's a vulnerability in Bruce and a vulnerability in his music that you what is the vulnerability of Brady and Belichick, right? They feel Superman-y, right? And I think Bruce feels Superman-y for all of us that have sang Rosalita and shaken our ass and camped out for tickets and been all and all that. And then you see this book and you see he's an injured soul and so injured that he had to go on stage for $1 million a night for 3 years and tell that story. And have you cry. I mean, the last couple of years of his life has been unbelievable. He's coming out and shaking his ass again, right? Like, you and I are going to be lined up at Giant Stadium at some point in the next 8 months, right? Please tell me that.
Well, I'm sure. And I think that, like, you know, there's vulnerabilities in Brady and Belichick also. I mean, the thing that I really enjoyed, the part of the story that I enjoyed telling most in the book was the 10 years where they weren't quite winning the Super Bowl and what it takes to kind of, when you're better than 99.8% of everybody who does this, what it takes to get that last fraction of a percent and how you have to dig deep. And I think there was some vulnerability there. Obviously Bruce is way more in touch with their feelings, I think, than these two guys, but you know, I think there is some vulnerability and you know, if Bruce comes out with E Street, yes, I will be there.
Hey, take care of yourselves. Great having you on. Good luck with the book. Seth Wickersham is here. The new book's out. Please go get it. It's Better to Be Feared. If you want to know how the enemy does it or has done it over the last quarter of a century, you can go check that out. Seth, appreciate you, man. Thanks for making some time with us. And I do hope to, I owe you a beer next time I run into you at a Springsteen show. All right.
My pleasure. Great to see
make
you.
Make it an expensive one, a New York beer, all right? It's Better to Be Feared, Seth Wickersham. Follow him out on Twitter, at Seth Wickersham, and of course, writing the writings of ESPN along with Don Van Natta. You can find me anywhere the internet travels at WNST and Baltimore Positive, on the radio all week, on the web all the time, and certainly the Maryland Crab Cake Tour coming to you. We're going to have the mayor at Coco's next month. If you missed last week's show, it was at Mother's. All ladies, all lady business owners. Serendipity took over last Friday at Mother's, and Kelly Rather came on, and we had a good time talking about Turner's and the old holograms and all that stuff. So hope you're checking that out. Hope you're getting ready for another Ravens game. Luke's going to be out in Owings Mills doing everything, all of brought to you by Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast, and our Maryland Crab Cake Tour, presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. Nick's Grandstand Grill on Friday in Timonium from 2 until 5. We're going to have a full schedule out probably through the end of the year coming very soon. I have the mayor's date is lined up for November as well, so all of that is good. Our Wise Conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. The back-to-school program's going on. We got Halloween around the corner. I picked up some Wise candy cake ice cream. Tastes as good as a tasty cake sounds. Wise Markets. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Never stop talking ice cream. Bill Belichick and Lamar Jackson.